As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Bowen. And Diop. And West Ham are back in the game. And he's made up for his mistake. Kevin Friend has had a look, and it is given as a penalty. This is one big kick. It is Jesse Lingard. It is 2-2. Another major contribution to the cause. It's West Ham's turn for a comeback now.
Hello and welcome to You Are Into West Ham podcast from the good people at The Athletic with me, Sam Delaney, and The Athletic's West Ham correspondent, Rashain Thomas. Hello, Rashain.
Morning, Sam.
How you doing, mate?
That's a good question. That is a really good question.
It's a busy week for a top football journalist like yourself, mate. No, your mind must be spinning.
Definitely spinning with this whole Super League stuff, pal, that's for sure. I'm still struggling to fathom how like these owners have sort of come up with this concept of a Super League, because obviously you're going into detail about your thoughts on it. My thoughts on it, it's an absolute disgrace. It's a betrayal to the fans, the English game. It kills away the hope, especially the English club. They don't want it to be like another Leicester winning the league, for example. Mm. They don't want it to be like a club like West Ham to upset the big six and qualify in the top four. They don't want, like, for example, a newly promoted club like Ipswich back in the day to come along and qualify in Europe. They want to kill all of that with this whole European Super League. And the biggest thing for me, it just kills away the hope. The moment a hope dies for a fan base, the moment the club dies. Hope goes a long way in life. And that's for any walk of life, whether it's football, your normal job, anything. And the biggest frustration with this Super League thing is trying to kill away the hope. And that, for me, is the biggest frustration. We touched on it earlier, well, before we were recording, in fact, that these Spanish clubs in so much debt, in so much debt, let's like they'll say, English clubs, come along, help us out. Help us out here. Let's form this Super League. Let's do a breakaway tournament where you can't even get relegated, Sam. You can't even get relegated. How does that even make sense? Yeah. How is that competitive? So yeah, the whole thing's absolute farce and shambles, and it should happen.
It stinks, doesn't it? And it is that American ideal of no relegation. We're only one step away from them outlawing draws as well. Because there's two things about American sport, and obviously there's big American sport billionaires involved in this plan. One is that they have that sort of closed shop without relegation. And the other thing is that it's just about, you know, it's treated like an entertainment industry like any other, you know. So how can we maximize the entertainment value, right, in quite a superficial way? It's like covering everything you eat with fucking sugar and treacle, right? It's quite nice for the first fucking, you know, when you have breakfast. But then when it's all you've eaten all day is sugar and treacle, you start to feel sick and you don't like it anymore and it's tedious. And actually, it's the light and shade of football which makes it the best sport in the world. It's the fact that some teams will dominate, but you know going into any game that there's always a chance that they will slip up or be outdone on the day by a supposedly smaller club. Right. It's the highs and the lows and the unexpectedness, the unpredictability of sport and the constant David and Goliath narratives that run through it that has made it the most popular sport in the history of mankind. Right. And they're removing a lot of that, and that's being driven by money. And I'm not joking when I say that that American mentality being applied to our game. You know, someone tweeted yesterday, this was the day that football ended and soccer began, right? So it's become soccer now. And I thought, yeah, I thought that was pretty poignant because I thought, yeah, that's what it's the Americanization of this sport, because too much American money and business mentality has infiltrated our sport. And they, for years, have laughed not only at the notion of relegation, because they think that that can, you know, makes it no business sense whatsoever, and they just only think of it in terms of business. But also, they've laughed at the idea of draws, haven't they? Remember, they think draws are hilarious, right? Ties, as they call them. I'm not joking. You know, if this goes ahead in a few years' time, that Super League, if it exists, they'll start doing stuff like that. And you'll be getting an extra goal for scoring from outside the area as well, like a three-pointer in basketball, right? Where does it end? The thing is that it doesn't matter. These teams, you know, like football is unsustainable in its current form, right? Particularly for these Spanish clubs. The Premier League does all right because it's the most popular league in the world. And because of the collective way in which they sell the television rights and share the money about, you know, that for me it's not a perfect, but it's a decent model. And it's why English football's done all right. Okay. Spanish football, Real Madrid and Barcelona have this presidential elected system, right? So the fans all have a say, which on the surface seems great. But the flaw in it is that the guy who tends to win the presidential election for Real Madrid, is simply always the guy who's promising to spend the most money on players, right? And so the amount of debt that clubs take on to keep feeding this monster, right, of a football fan base who kind of just always want superstar signings, right? The whole idea that was established 20, 25 years ago with the Galacticos, you know, this idea, and kids grow up with the idea as well from playing Football Manager and FIFA that, you know, you've got to assemble a sort of an Avengers sort of mentality. You've got to have a footballing Avengers with all the best players in all the best positions, right? It's ridiculous. It's unsustainable. It means that clubs keep spending more money than they have. And that is unsustainable. But when you realise that's unsustainable, you've got two choices. You can either say, well, let's change things. Let's change this model. Let's abandon this model and go back to a more sustainable one where we live within our means, because football used to be run like that and it was perfectly entertaining. You could even argue more entertaining then. There weren't clubs at the top who were dominating everything through their, you know, financial might. You know, there were giant killings and just more of a sort of a democratic mix of footballing power existed. And that is why when I was growing up in the 80s, it was thrilling when you'd see, you know, teams like Forest or Villa prevail in the league and then in Europe, or, you know, teams like West Ham or Southampton or Ipswich would be competing for the league title until the final weeks, you know, cup finals with Coventry beating Tottenham or Wimbledon beating Liverpool. The whole country would stop like it was bloody Christmas Day to watch these matches. No one knows what the FA Cup final is now because no one cares, because it's probably going to be Man City versus bloody Arsenal. It's going to be a tedious match. The players couldn't care less about it. They've got no idea of the cultural significance of it. And no one cares about that, right? No one cares about any of that stuff. So it's stupid.
No, for sure. You're spot on. And just touching on that, that's the art of the Champions League. When the big clubs like a Real Madrid and Liverpool, for example, the other day, once every so often, you look forward to it because it doesn't happen every week. And that's where they don't understand that this whole concept of the European Super League, it will devalue it. Like, who wants to watch that every... Like, for example, look at the match on Sunday, Fulham against Arsenal. Like, Fulham look like they're going to win, and then Arsenal now has got a draw. But that was exciting because you thought, come on, Fulham, get a result. And I find it so laughable that Arsenal and Tottenham have found their way in the Super League. Like, have they seen where they are on the table? Have European pedigree? Yeah, I disagree with that completely. But you know what, sir?
Well, it's about brand, isn't it? It's about brand. You look at it, and everyone's laughing at them. And again, I think it's really important that all of us as football fans, and it's hard for me to do this because I'm very partisan and I love getting stuck into rival clubs. So it's really important to always be referring to the owners of these clubs and not the clubs themselves. Because take any of them, Arsenal Football Club, is a great club, great history, you know, the fans are at the heart of it, and they've had no say in this, right? And of course, it is laughable in their current state that they're going to get invited there. But again, if you look at it from the perspective of the people who are putting this league together, they want the teams who have the highest global profile right now. But that's the other thing. It shows that they misunderstand football, because they think, who's got the highest global profile right now at this moment in time, right? Because 10 years ago, Tottenham wouldn't have been considered at all, or City, right? Or 15, 20 years ago, Chelsea either. Man U, Arsenal and Liverpool really are the three perennially big three clubs in this country, right? Others come and go. When I was a kid, it was Everton. In the 90s, it was Newcastle, right? So it all changes and fluctuates all the time. But they're going to invite two teams who now, they probably based it on global shirt sales. They probably based it on who sells the most bloody shirts in China or something like that, you know?
Yeah. But look, Arsenal, right? Never won the Champions League. Man City, never won the Champions League. Tottenham Hotspur, they've never won the Champions League. You might as well write Nottingham Forest or Aston Villa.
What about Celtic?
Yeah.
What about Celtic
or Ajax? I was touching earlier, just regarding the owners. I'm more disappointed in Man City and Liverpool owners. We can forgive those areas, working class areas where, you know, really the value of the community. Strong traditions, you know, a club like a West Ham or Everton or Southampton, they aspire to be like that one day in the future. And the way they've acted over the past, since Monday, it's been absolutely shameful. I thought Gary Neville was spot on in terms of saying, listen, maybe they should be out of their clubs. I loved what I saw before the match between Leeds and Liverpool yesterday, where fans are like, owners are absolutely terrible. Because it's right, we should go to these areas, you think of, you know, well-run clubs, but that's anything far from that over the past, 48 hours.
And I think that's the thing. As I think about it, I don't know how it's going to unfold. I've got no idea. Some people are saying, oh, it's only a leverage tool. It's a negotiation tool, UEFA. Other people are saying, no, it's gone much further than that. They've signed deals. This is not a bluff. You know, I don't know what will happen. But what I do know is that everyone has reacted over the last 24 hours or 48 hours with, fans have, we've all reacted with confusion and anger, right? And there's lots of different ways that's being fired about. So on social media, you're seeing a lot of people focus on having a pop at Arsenal and Tottenham for the temerity of them being involved in it, yeah? And then there's a bit of banter, or it can get nasty amongst the fans as well. But actually, it is important for us as fans to all show solidarity. Do you know what I mean? In a way, in what's happening now, what this is interlopers. I think Gary Neville called them imposters, right? Interlopers from outside of our sport, people who have no interest in sport. Like, what's his name? Henry at Liverpool. He's got no interest. Someone was saying he doesn't even follow. I was listening to a radio last night. Someone said he doesn't even follow Liverpool on Twitter. Right. These people, they buy it as entities, like they buy any business, right? That's their what they do. But what they don't understand is, I'm not one of these people who say I hate all businessmen, right? I do understand that when you're in business, your sole objective a lot of the time is to maximize, you know, the amount of money that you and your shareholders draw from a business. And in that sense, there is, you know, some rational thought behind joining a closed shop like this, right? But it shows a fundamental misunderstanding of what makes football appealing, right? Which is the jeopardy and the unpredictability, right? But I think that, you know, these people, they don't understand either, more importantly, as you just touched upon, the cultural and social significance of football. And that is why, really, the point at which it started becoming too much of a business, which isn't now, it's right back, going back to the beginning of the Premier League. Make no mistake, these games will start, like Gridiron, these games will start being played all over the world. They've been trying to get that started for ages, and it will definitely happen with this. Manchester United, Liverpool will be played in like Bangkok or Singapore or Miami, you know, or Sydney, Australia. So 20,000 Liverpool fans who live in the Anfield area, right, and have been going there since their dads or their granddads don't want to go. You know what? John Henry's laughing. He's saying, do you think that's relevant? Because we're going to be at a big fucking stadium in Kuala Lumpur, and it's going to have 150,000 kids in it, all paying like 50 quid a pop, mate. So I don't care about you. We're basically a franchise, like an American franchise, like the Raiders, who went from LA to Oakland to Las Vegas. Same thing.
Yeah. You know, it's not just that, but also if you're a player, right, potentially you could be banned from playing in the World Cup or a European Championship. That's what you're also supposed to come out and said. So let's say, right, you're Andy Robertson for Liverpool or Scott McTominay for Man United or Kieran Tierney from Arsenal, and you help Scotland qualify for a European Championship. The first time for a major tournament for quite some time, and you're being told, play in this tournament and you can't help Scotland for the summer in the European Championships. Surely as a player, you must think, no way can that happen. No way. Yeah. And that's what's so important right now for a player. Yeah, I know you have contractual agreements, sponsorship agreements. Forget all of that. It's not important right now. You got to use your platform to say, this is wrong, and here's why it's wrong, and here's why I won't be involved. That's what I thought yesterday. It was really good. We saw James Milner use his platform with Sky last night and say, disagrees with it. Not up for it at all. Jurgen Klopp saying, disagrees with it. Maintaining his stance from 2019. He also said, I don't agree with the European Super League. If you're a player right now, use your platform. Don't be quiet. Now, this could be a massive moment in football. Let's say this happened, right? We could look back and say, the United has won, and we stopped this from happening. We all know Twitter can be very toxic. I cannot recall the last time everyone was so unified on one topic and said, this can't happen. I can't remember the last time that happened, Sam. Can't remember the last time everyone universally condemned something like this. So another thing with the owners, right? We don't hear from them. We don't hear from a Joe Glazer or Stan Kroenke. There's a reason why they call him Silent Stan. We don't hear from these people. Yeah. So we can put out leases, but we know for a fact you didn't write it. There's no way you wrote that press release. You can sign your name off at the end, but you didn't press a single button on a laptop to write about press release. Mm. So that's another reason why people are getting annoyed. And then you get good people, like good managers, coming out and having to be thrown in a bus into the media, having to answer questions like they weren't even consulted out beforehand. The whole thing is absolutely wrong. It's been handled wrong, and I hope it doesn't happen.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hello, listeners. Sorry to interrupt your show, but we've got a small favor to ask. We're currently doing a bit of a survey to find out more about you, your podcast listening habits, and the sort of adverts that are most relevant to you. If you feel like helping, please head to surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. That's pretty catchy, so I'll say it one more time. surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. Thank you.
One last thing, talking about our owners, is that I've been, you know, pretty clear on my views on our owners. And even, you know, I've recently been asked when I was been doing stuff on Five Live and whatnot about, oh, do you like the, everyone's trying to wind West Ham fans up saying, oh, you don't care about the owners anymore, do you? Now you're doing well. And it's a real wind up. Because you go, yeah, I think these are bad owners. They've run the club badly. They've created a bad image around the club. They have made numerous mistakes and they've acted with incompetence, right? What's happening at the moment with the team is down to David Moyes. But let's not forget that David Moyes, they bloody sacked him even when he kept us up. And he only came back again by default because literally they had created such a toxic atmosphere around the club that he was the only guy they could get. So they can't even take credit for David Moyes. Right. We are doing well this season in spite of our owners. So the owners aren't off the hook. Right. And it's almost like some fans or people in the media are saying we're not allowed to be happy about the team because we've been slagging off the owners. It's like there are two distinct things. So that got that out of my chest. But with regards to Super League, I'm still Gold, Sullivan and Brady out. However, I would say when you look at what what our friends at Chelsea and City and United and all the other clubs are going for at the moment. I think, well, bloody hell, at least we've got club owners who are there inside the club, visible, probably talk too much. They're the opposite of silent Stan, right? And in the case of Sullivan and Gold, as much as they go on about it and it's annoying, are fans. They are football fans and they are fans, passionate fans of West Ham. Now, they don't get it right, and I would like to see someone else run this club with more competence. But it's shifted my view these last 48 hours a lot, because although I think there's plenty of people who could do a better job, what I now think is, well, I would sooner keep these three than get some sort of sovereign state or huge business conglomerate or hedge fund, you know, some sort of faceless, shadowy figure who sees it as a money-making machine. To be honest, I would take Sullivan and Gold over that. And I don't know if I would have said that a few days ago, because I was a bit like, oh, anyone would be better. And who wouldn't want, you know, a big American sports conglomerate to take us over and give us hundreds of millions of pounds? Now I think, no, actually, and that's quite a shift of position for me. And those last 48 hours have taught me it, because you're hearing City fans on Twitter saying we're switching to West Ham.
Switching to West Ham.
Liverpool and City fans have been saying it, and these are amazing fans, Liverpool and City fans. Yeah. You know, City fans and West Ham fans, we relate to each other a lot, because there is a sort of affiliation between them traditionally.
For sure.
And these are proper fans, and they're like, we're run by these nobodies, man, and we don't want to be part of that anymore. And my heart breaks for all of those fans.
And you know what, right? I know our owners can be very vocal when it comes to the media, but quite often whenever they come out to the media, they're very accurate in terms of how they feel. They're not going to be like, you know, a Henry or Glazer or Kroenke and just sort of give me the trained answers. If it's a Sullivan, yeah, you know he's going to do it from the heart. It will piss us off, but at least it's from the heart nonetheless.
Exactly. It'll be wrong or rude or obnoxious or misplaced, but he's not bullshitting us like some mealy-mouthed politician.
Exactly. It's from the heart. Like, for example, when he had an interview with TalkSport, it's like he's feeling depressed because we haven't signed a striker. Yeah, we're all depressed, but you know what? Good on you for being honest. But you know what, Sam? I disagree with you slightly with the earlier point on the honest, because last week, right, I got criticised for it. I'll put my hands up. I got criticised for it, but I actually wrote a piece sort of in defence of the owners, in the fact that they're learning from their mistakes. Because this season, right, on the team's doing great, I can't think of one controversy with Kyle Brady's column. I can't think of one. Sullivan, again, with an interview with TalkSport. Yeah, it's annoying, but he's honest. He's honest. He's saying there's no regrets over saying Grady Agana. I think we can all agree with that now. No regrets whatsoever.
Well, to be fair, that was the point at which people got angriest.
Yeah.
And to be fair, that decision has been vindicated.
Yeah.
You can't argue that anymore. You know.
Can't argue that. We didn't sign Jayne Tarkowski for 40 million. Good defender, but 40 million again.
No, that's they've been vindicated. But I might be wrong about this, but I give all the credit for all of the things you're talking about to David Moyes. That's how starry eyed I am about David Moyes. I think that David Moyes told Sullivan, don't buy that defender, it's too expensive. They had to beg him to come back because they'd humiliated him the first time around. And I reckon he used that as leverage. He said, all right, I'll come back. And I know you're not going to pay me full whack, but there's got to be some ground rules. And here they are, right? And they stuck it. But I don't know. I've got no way of knowing whether or not that's true. I'm just choosing to believe that.
No, but if that is the case, then it's good to see them learn a little bit. And as you touched on, I'd rather have Evan Charles than American owners whose heart's not in the club.
Yeah.
They're looking for one quick buck. Like, I know they're annoying. They come out and say some bad stuff sometimes, but I'd rather that be the case than having some American.
Well, today, as we sit here looking what's happening to these other clubs run by the complete opposite, for the first time probably ever since those guys have been in charge of my club, a little bit of me feels lucky, because suddenly I feel like for the last 10 years and the move to the London Stadium especially has made me feel that we lost that kind of the family spirit of the club. And I just sort of thought that we'd lost a lot of that in various ways. We were no longer a club that people had much affection for. And we were playing in this horrendous stadium and these owners just seemed like spivs and all the rest of it. But today I sort of think, actually, I feel like in comparison to these other clubs who are basically throwing themselves at the mercy of money and becoming like, basically deciding to become like, you know, American sporting franchises, we're a club that's run by a couple of Cockney blokes, right? Yeah. Made good. One of whom grew up in Green Street, right? And Karen Brady, who I think is a great shining example to young women everywhere who worked her way up to the top of big business. Yeah. We know who they are. They're very visible. They make themselves accountable, really. And I would still rather the club was run by people better than them. But I do not think any of these big monies are better than them.
So I have a question. This morning, right, I received a few DMs from people saying, listen, if West Ham had been offered a chance to be part of the Super League, the board would be all over it. They'll be on their knees begging for a place in this Super League breakaway. Yeah. Do you reckon that would have been the case had West Ham been invited?
Of course. Totally. I do. And although I'm sort of praising them, I think that I'm praising them and it's easy for me to do so because we haven't been invited and we're not in the league. But I think if that amount of money is dangled under their noses, I think they would have probably said yes. Yeah, I think they would have done. And I think after the year that clubs have had, you know, and the panic that we don't see it because we still see the teams turning out every week, playing these games, signing players. But I think that the reality of club finances for all these clubs at the moment is pretty dire, right? Because it's been a long time without fans. And I think, you know, if you're feeling really desperate and your back's to the wall, and West Ham already was running, you know, I think, I can't remember the ins and outs of the books, but, you know, they were very often running at a loss, right? Because of the money that they were investing in transfers and managers. And now this, it's very hard if someone gives you a sweetener, a golden welcome of like £300 million or whatever it was, to say, nah, you're all right. You know, and there's the peer pressure element as well. There's the sort of like, oh, shit, they've offered us a place. If we don't take it, maybe Leicester or Everton will. Do you know what I mean? So I think, I can't be sure, but I think they probably would have said yes. And that's why it's easy for me to sit and go, oh, we got proper club owners who understand the club. They probably would have taken the opportunity. How many owners can put their hand on their heart and say they wouldn't have been tempted into this, you know? But it's disgusting and outrageous.
No, for sure. I'm in the middle. I'm torn between whether they'll say yes or no. I reckon their head will say yes, but their heart will say no.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then it'd be a matter of I totally agree with that. Yeah. And then it's a matter of what would win out. And you sort of sometimes think their head wins out in those situations. But I agree with you that I think they understand football in a way that the owners of all those other clubs, I mean, Daniel Levy, I think, is a Spurs fan. So maybe not him. But you look at like Abramovich, who I think probably is passionate about Chelsea and football. If not, I do think he was probably motivated by just loving football when he bought Chelsea. But he doesn't have that cultural social connection to Chelsea's fan base and the history of the club and the role it plays in the community and stuff. But the Americans at Liverpool and Man U and Arsenal and the people who own Man City, you just sort of think they wouldn't have had any, the heart just wouldn't have played a part in any of it at all. Do you know what I mean? I can't stop thinking about how amazing a league without those six teams would be. The idea that it's small time when you've got Newcastle, Leeds, West Ham, Everton and Villa competing. Those clubs are all as big as these. I mean, yeah, that's a bit of an exaggeration. I mean, United and Liverpool are way ahead in terms of size and history of any other football club in our country, right? And it's such a shame because those are teams who didn't buy it in the first place. These are like ordinary working class clubs who pulled themselves up by the bootstraps, literally, to become, you know, if you look at Liverpool and what Shankly did in the 60s, you know, it was incredible. And that's why it's such a tragedy what's being done to them now by the current owners. But if you rule out those two, it's a match of a muchness. If you look at history, certainly fan base, stadiums, all the rest of it, you know, Spurs, Chelsea, come on, City. You know, Everton, just in the 80s, which seems like yesterday to me, Everton were the main club in the country. You know, in the 90s, Newcastle were the number one. I mean, they weren't, unfortunately, they didn't win the league, but they dominated that decade. They were the club that everyone wanted to watch and talk about, you know?
Yeah.
It would be, I'm thrilled at the prospect of it. It would be a shame I'd miss those other clubs. I would like the idea that they have to get chucked out and then call back a few years later and do what Rangers have had to do in Scotland or what Juventus did in Italy, where they had to work their way back up in stages through the divisions.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Brought to your ears by The Athletic, I'm Adam Hurry, and Football Clichés is the podcast you never knew you needed. Every week, to quite unnecessary depth, we examine the words, the phrases, the accepted wisdom, the mannerisms, the habits, the gestures, the symbols, the sounds, and the smells that everyone takes for granted in football, but which really are the glorious glue that holds it all together. For example, have you ever really listened to the Football League goals roundups? I mean, really listened to them? Because they all sound pretty much like this. Team X went into this game with just one win in their last 13, and when Team Y took the lead inside 4 minutes at Stadium Z, the home fans were probably starting to fear the worst. But Striker A had other ideas, and this game turned on its head in the space of 5 minutes midway through the second half. First, a smart finish from the edge of the box brought Team X level, and he repeated the trick on the hour mark to bring his tally for the season to 22. By now, Team X were in the mood, and although Striker A squandered a gilt-edged chance to complete his hat-trick, on-loan Dutchman winger B made it three with a curling effort from long range. Team Y's misery was compounded in stoppage time when midfielder C's late challenge on fullback D saw them reduced to 10 men. An afternoon to forget for manager E's men then, but Team X will hope they have finally turned a corner under caretaker boss manager F.
Listen to Football Clichés wherever you get your podcasts and also ad-free when you subscribe to The Athletic.
Let's talk a bit about West Ham. A really disappointing performance and result against Newcastle at the weekend. You have to look at it and say, in the context of the last four games, in a way it was coming because you can't keep playing like we played against Arsenal, Wolves and Leicester, you know, without eventually getting beat. And all those performances were effectively the same. I mean, yeah, we probably did play worse against Newcastle than we had done in the other games. But people forget there were so many chances for that in those other games that Arsenal probably should have beaten us. And Wolves and Leicester both had really good chances to get a point against us. So it was going to happen. So what I'm saying is, Shane, is that there is something wrong. Earlier in the season, we were a clean sheet machine. We were first and foremost really difficult to play against. Now the opposite is true. What the hell's going on, and what should David Moyes do about it?
For sure. You know, after my match piece, after I posted my match piece for the Newcastle game, people are like, oh, I was Shane, like, you're overreacting. I was like, not at all. Not at all. 10 goals conceded in the last four matches, Sam.
Yeah, unacceptable.
Offensively, but for whatever reason, we keep making too many defensive errors. Before that match against Newcastle, I thought Dawson was looking very shaky. Very, very shaky. It's reached a point where I don't even think he's deserving of being called Virgil van Dawson right now.
I know.
Not based on what I've seen over the past.
And I know you wouldn't say that lightly either, Rashane. So that's quite a big bombshell coming from you. But I agree. I think we've got to drop it for now.
Yeah, for now. There's one point in the season where we're all clamoring for him to be an England squad.
Yeah.
And now you could argue he doesn't have to be a start 11.
That's
how drastic his form has dropped.
I think Balbuena, who will get a chance now, presumably. But he must be gutted because he didn't put a foot wrong when he was playing earlier in the season, right? I think he took a knock, was out, and then didn't get his set back in. I know it's partly to do with his contract situation and stuff, but we've let in all those goals. I was surprised that he hadn't made changes anyway before Newcastle. I don't think Diop has looked completely convincing. I think the thing about Diop is he switches off
yeah.
in games. he looks brilliant one moment, but then he switches off, right? Ogbonna's been a big loss. Cresswell and Ogbonna and Rice are three leaders, right? And we've been, and they haven't played together, all three of them, in a game for a long time now. I wonder, do you think that maybe is an issue? Is that we've lacked the, you know, the vocal players are your Cresswells and Ogbonna's and Declan Rice's. Is that an issue?
That's an issue, but Ogbonna was supposed to bring some sort of calmness to the defence against Newcastle. And then we go concede three goals again. So it's like, that proved to no avail. And you know what, right? I'm going to say Moyes got it wrong with his formation. I don't think you should have played a ring back system in that match. I only think it works if you have Masuaki or Cresswell. If you have both, I don't think you should play that formation. Stick with a back four, because Ben Johnson, I thought he had a decent match, but in my opinion, he was at fault for Willock's winner. I feel like he should have ended that much better. So I feel like he should have gone to a back four. But the thing is, right, the squad is so threadbare right now. We lack squad depth. We're getting injuries all over the pitch. So I guess in fairness to David Moyes, he has to make do with what he has right now. But listen, they need to get the act together, because why are you going to make the threats mistakes right now when we're so close? We're so close. Fair enough if you do it in September or October, but not now. There's a lot at stake. In my piece, right, I mentioned between January and February, West Ham kept four clean sheets. Since March, it's been one clean sheet, Sam. Just one clean sheet.
It's amazing, the turnaround. So what would you do now against Chelsea? Would you switch to a back four, or is Masuaku going to be back in time for that?
Yeah, well, no more Moises Presser on Friday. But if Masuaku and Cresswell are back for that match, because Cresswell only missed because he just failed a late fitness test for the Newcastle game.
Oh, okay.
So hopefully he'll be back for the game against Chelsea. But if he's not and Masuaku's still out, go to a back four. But if they're involved, obviously you could play a win-back system. But obviously Barbarina is very likely he'll play with Dawson being suspended. So that's good to see. And as you touched on, he was in good form. Now is a great chance for him to impress again and show why he never deserved to lose the place. Place in the team in the first place. So hopefully he has a good game. And Dawson will be on the sidelines watching on, because in my opinion,
he should be dropped anyway. And I think, you know, we'll see what happens, but he might not get back in the team once his suspension's over. I think it might only be a small thing, but I think Ogbonna was playing on the left of a back three because Cresswell was out and Ogbonna's obviously left-footed. Ogbonna, for me, is better at the heart of a back three, where he completely commands the whole thing. And when you're playing offsides or whatever, he's the one who commands the line, because it would be the central one. He couldn't do that because he's the left footer, so he had to play there. But with Dawson out and Cresswell potentially back, if we could play Cresswell on the left side of a back three and put Ogbonna back into middle, I think that's when you get the best out of Ogbonna, and he's able to like really organise the defence properly. And in that third space, I would say now to Balbuena, because you just can't. Diop looks all right at times, but he makes mistakes. He was responsible for the first goal. And I just think you've got to, you can't just stick with the same players. Diop's got to go. Balbuena's got to come in. And I'd be very happy indeed if we managed to start with that back three, with Balbuena, Ogbonna and Cresswell, because I think some of our best defensive performances all season came with those three.
You know, my biggest frustration with like Diop, I'll be like in the press box thinking, Diop, what are you doing? Play the simple pass. Come on, man. Get your act together and then he'll score. And then he'll score. That's the biggest frustration with Diop, because in that match against Newcastle, doing the same thing. Come on, man. You've got to make the pass much better. And he scores with Boran providing the assist. So that's the biggest. If he can, right, be a lot better in terms of his defensive decisions, or making the better pass instead of complicating things, he'll be such a good defender. Mm. The monster that Jose Mourinho said, but he's a bit sloppy at times. That's the frustration with Diop.
Yeah, he needs someone to take him in hand. You know what I wish? I wish that we would hire Rio Ferdinand to just come in and coach Diop once a week, one-on-one. That's what I want. And Rio would do it because he loves West Ham. Get Rio in to teach him how to make the step up from being a decent Premier League defender to a very good one, you know, because he could be a player similar. He's got that same elegance, pace, composure on the ball. But like a young Rio, he sometimes takes too many touches, or he overthinks things, or he tries to be too clever. But when you look Rio at his peak, when he was at United, what made him at his peak was he knew when to take the ball out, but he also knew when to just hoof it into row Z, you know? And
you know what, Stan, very quickly, I'm going to say that is an absolutely fantastic idea, because We've seen Stuart Pearce have the impact on Cresswell and Masuaku. 7 assists for Cresswell so far this season. And we all know that Masuaku's improved massively this season. Kevin Nolan, what was he in his playing career? A nice box-to-box midfielder. We've seen that with Thomas Suchek, scoring nine goals. Get someone like a Rio Ferdinand in. It can only be wonders for someone like a...
I reckon Rio would do it. It's one day a week. He's rich. He doesn't need that amount of money because, like, you know, just give him whatever we can afford. Get him in. And I reckon Rio Ferdinand could turn Issa Diop into a world-class defender.
I reckon David Moyes would agree with that. Yeah. David, if it is a podcast, get Rio in.
Get a specialist. So Chelsea up next. Massive game. I would say that, you know, it's a disappointment that we lost against Newcastle. I think, if anything, I feel slightly more confident against Chelsea because the reason we struggle against Newcastle is that we're a counter-attacking team. It's the first time in a while we've come up against a team who just wanted to sit back completely. We didn't quite know what to do with that. That's the strain that the big clubs have. That's why big clubs, that is why United got Fernandes in to replace Lingard. Because as much as we love Lingard, what he's not is one of those tricky players with the final threaded through ball like Christian Eriksen used to do for example, or Ozil used to do for Arsenal. And that's what Fernandes does. And you realise that's why the big clubs who have to play the vast majority of their games against teams who park the bus, they need that magician to unlock the door. That's maybe something we don't have. And that's why I think we struggled at times against Newcastle. However, against Chelsea are going to come at us because it's at their place as well. And if anything, that makes me feel more confident about us getting something from the game. How do you feel?
It's actually our place. Okay.
All right. Well,
Well, you know what, right? I'm not that confident, to be honest, Sam. I'm not confident for the Chelsea match.
Right.
I think it's going to be it's probably the game of the season, you could argue. Game of the season is so important. Back-to-back defeats. I know we still have a relatively easy running, but it would just be so damaging for morale and confidence not to lose against Chelsea. And listen, I'll take a draw right now.
Yeah,
I'll take a draw right now in that match. And my own, I've been very consistent with this. I only feel like the one way we can get into that top four, if Chelsea become so sloppy and prioritise other competitions like the Champions League, for example. Mm. Obviously, we know the European Super League and all that sort of stuff, but I'm just focusing on the here and now. If they prioritise that, get complacent, we have a chance. But that game will be so tough, so tough. And I think the pressure will get to the players, if in honesty.
Really?
Yeah, I reckon the pressure. We've seen it recent weeks, the pressure getting to the players, being 3-0 up and forever just making silly mistakes and inviting our team back and them scoring two
goals. It's such a shame. It's moments like this that we could really do with Declan Rice because I think he's such a strong leader and he's got such a positivity about him. I mean, you see him up close and personal when you're in a stadium, but you said how vociferous he is on the pitch. And I imagine he's one of those blokes who sort of goes out with the belief that we're going to win in every game and that spreads through the team. And it's just a disastrous time to be missing him, isn't it?
Well, in the return fixture against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge in December, he was very vociferous on that pitch. My goodness, Sam, I was very close in terms of the way Jesse Rimmer, the players are coming out. All I could hear was Declan Rice. In that match. Come on, guys. We come on. Let's do this. We can still win. Mm. Mark Noble, the captain that day, Sam. But all I could hear was Declan Rice. If it was on TV, I'll put it on mute. That's how much I could hear Declan Rice during my match. So listen, that's how much I could hear him. So we're definitely going to miss him in terms of leader. But listen, time for other players to step up. It can't always be Declan Rice. Other players got to step up and be good leaders for the team on the pitch as well. So we all know he'll be back, well, hopefully back before the end of the season. But until that happens, someone's got to step up and show we can also be the leader on the pitch.
Well, it's a time for heroes. A strange time. But I think you're right, Rashane. Let's focus on the here and now. Forget about the Super League. Let's focus on West Ham. We've got 6 games between us and a Champions League that might not even exist. It'll be classic West Ham luck, but let's see how it goes. Mate, should we wrap it up?
Yeah.
Let's wrap it up. It's been a very long one, but I think, you know, it's a time that demands that sort of full and frank and thorough discussion. We'd love to hear all your views, of course, so tweet me at Delaney Man or Rashane at Rashane Sport. Thanks for listening. Come on, you Irons. And remember, ladies and gents, there's only one. Samasiabu!
The Athletic.